This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of Back of the Nest, The Palace Years. And this episode we're going to be looking at the 2011 and 2012 season, which was quite important for many reasons. Chris Hamblin is otherwise engaged, so I will be your host this evening, Mike Scott.
Back of the Nest, the Palace Years.
I'm joined by Patrick O'Connor. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good, good. And making his Palace Years debut, Si Pizzi. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you very much. Great, great to be here making my debut and reflecting on some excellent years of football.
Yeah, well, yeah. And this was quite a memorable year for a number of reasons, which we'll go into, not least the Man United game. Before we get into it, though, got some corrections. We've done the first two episodes. They've been out for a few days. And thank you for everyone that's listened to them so far. If you haven't, go back and have a listen. We started with the 09-10 season. And we're going right the way up to the 18-19 season with this series. I don't know how we're going to take it after this summer, but we wanted to do something over the summer. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to make them sort of timeless so you can go back and listen whenever you want. Mikey, who runs Back of the Nest, for the most part, is going to stick them all up on the website at some point. I don't think he's done it yet, but by the time you listen to this, he might well have done. So they'll all be up there. Otherwise, they're in our feed as normal. But in the 09-10 episode, Christopher Hamblin referred to an Ambrose goal, a screamer against Aston Villa, that he said Gabor Kirai let in. So Steve Hodd sent us a tweet and said, he sent a video across and said, definitely doesn't look like Gabor Kirai in goal to me. Smiley face with a little crying tear emoji. Maybe get the facts right before you broadcast it in future. And then a little winky face with his tongue sticking out. Now, I got to say, the emojis mark you down there, Steve. But fair enough, good point. It was, in fact, Brad Friedel who let in that 37-yard Ambrose goal against Villa. So apologies there. And then the other thing from that episode, Hambo asked the teaser of who Paul Ifill went off to play for after Palace. Now, Patrick, did you do your homework on this? Did you look up who it was?
Yeah, so Wellington in Australia, wasn't it?
Wellington Phoenix, indeed. He went on to play 106 games, 33 goals. So whoever knew that, well done to you. So that is the corrections. And then in the 10-11 episode, apologies, there was an upload error and it seemed that some random chat was uploaded in the middle. So if you listen to something in the first few days and noticed it going a bit weird, I think that's been corrected. But Yeah, so this one, hopefully there'll be no corrections, but we can't guarantee it because it's a long time ago. A lot of us drunk quite a lot of the time, perhaps even still do, and our memories are hazy. So do bring us up on anything and we will correct it in future episodes. So the 11-12 season, obviously still in the Championship. We'll talk about who came in for the start of the season. So we had Jedinak end up coming in from a Turkish team who I'm going to attempt to pronounce, but probably can't do a very good job. Genleberligi. So if someone wants to pick us up on how to pronounce that, that'd be excellent. So he came in, obviously a huge player, legendary in the club. It's actually been released by Villa as well before this pod. So who knows where he's going to end up. Glenn Murray came from Brighton. Johnny Parr came over from Aylesund. Chris Martin came in the mid-season from Norwich. He didn't arrive, I think, until November. But he did exceptionally well that season, scoring 7 goals. And I think a lot of you remember him very fondly. Antonio Pedroza from Chiapas in Mexico. Johnny Williams up from the youth team as well. And the other thing about that season that will make you jog your memories is we had that beautiful Brazil away kit, the yellow kit, that we beat United in. So that is the season that we're talking about. So it was an up and down season. We ended up 17th. But it was a really good start to the season. And in particular, we had an excellent League Cup run, which we will go into. But first up, we played Peterborough. And Sean Scannell put us 1-0 up. We ended up losing 2-1. And I'm going to pass to Si Pizzi on this because he was living in Peterborough at the time, went to the game.
I have some... thanks, Mike. I have some special memories of that game and my time in Peterborough. So I had headed to the game, obviously living locally. It was such a great ground, this sort of small, tight ground. And there was lots of excitement because this was really kind of the first season that we'd rebuilt after administration. And the great work and finishing in the league the season before and what we talked about in the previous pod. So it was with lots of optimism. And I said, we went 1-0 up from Scannell, looking really good. And Peterborough did look good at times, but really we dominated. But in true Palace style, we gave away two sort of easy-ish goals in the second half. And the Peterborough fans loved it. And they were probably one of the most cockiest set fans I can remember. I still remember it today, how cocky they were. But no, it was great to be there. And I'm just reflecting on some of the team that we had that day. So it was really kind of the foundation for later seasons and our promotion with Spironi, with McCarthy. Ramage was there. And then we had, obviously, Murray. We had Zaha coming on for Scannell in the 70th minute. So it was a real, real positive start. But the result, unfortunately, let us down at the end. But that wasn't the top memory of Peterborough. So I was living in a place. It was a shared sort of like flat accommodation. I was there for like 2-ish years between sort of like 2010 and 2012. And about 5 years later, more than that, about 9 years later, I was watching Two True Crimes. And it turned out I was living 2 doors down from the what was called the Peterborough Ditch Murderer. She was a lady called sort of Joanne Dennehy, and she's in prison now for sort of mass murder, and she's the most dangerous Britain's ever woman. She was 2 doors down from me, and to be fair, she didn't kill anyone, I think, when I was there, but it was pretty amusing when we worked that one out watching TV. And then and I wonder why it was so cheaper, like 75 quid a month, all bills in. But I'm pretty much lucky to be alive, I think, after watching that.
I've just googled a picture of her, and yes, you are very much lucky to be alive. Yeah, she is terrifying. And in fact, if you type Joanna D into Google, she's the first result. So obviously pretty legendary. Interesting. I mean, I seen Peterborough was a nice, easygoing town. I've played a couple of gigs there and stuff, but didn't realise that kind of stuff happened. I certainly didn't realise you got 75 quid rent within the last decade. That is amazing. That was a poor start, and we then went on to get 2 home wins on the trot after that, and it was looking pretty decent, and that included the amazing 2-1 win against Coventry, where we were 1-0 down until the very last minute and ended up winning 2-1. There is a comment from Josh Nolan. Sean Scannell and Jermaine Easter, commentary at home, scenes. That's all he put about the memory of that entire season. That was his number one memory. So, Patrick, what do you remember about that game?
Scannell had really come on that season for us. I remember the season before, he obviously was a big part of a couple seasons before the Sheffield Wednesday game. But just as that season started coming to his own, and Jermaine Easter, who was, I think, underappreciated by a lot of Palace fans, he actually scored some quite important goals. And that game in particular was a standout game in the fact that, again, we were trailing at home. And the HF, I remember watching some highlights of that. And that's when I think that they started putting out their own videos on YouTube about them. You kind of saw the atmosphere kind of change, and they focused on putting out the typhos and that kind of stuff. So it was an amazing comeback, and something that, you know, wasn't really used to as a Palace fan coming back that late in the season and scoring a goal. So it was goals to win the game. So it was a really important win. And as you said, that was put on a little bit of a run there on the doggy. We ended up winning, I think it was 4 matches in a row then.
Yeah, obviously a very strong start to the season. I think it's just going back to what Si said about the team. Somebody very kindly on Wikipedia put who the most amount of appearances was for each position for that season, which isn't there for the majority of the seasons when you go back and try and reminisce. So Spironi in goal with 44 appearances. Then you got a back four of Nathaniel Klein, Paddy McCarthy, Anthony Gardner, Jonathan Parr, who we'll definitely come back to. Then you've got a midfield of Mille, KG, Wilfried Zaha, Darren Ambrose, and then you've got Scannell and Murray in front of them. I mean, that is a decent side. And I mean, I look back at that pretty damn fondly. I would say that this was the season that sort of started the roots to what we have now. I mean, go for it, Si.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It was the real foundation of what came the season and the season after that. But for me, I always remember Williams came off the bench that game, and he really transformed the game. It was one of Johnny's better games that season.
Oh, was it that game? I was trying to think which one it was.
He just bossed it from when he came on. So he was brilliant. And it was such a shame with the injuries, because you could tell his intelligence, his time on the ball. He had a couple of seconds more than everyone else every time he got the ball. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think he would have came back that game. But there was a real optimism and buzz in the ground. And I really thought that season we could have done something special. But I think it was just the consistency that was down, as we'll go on to sort of talk about. But yeah, great scene, Glenn.
And I also want to add that we reminisce about the structure of our sides under people like Pulis and Allardyce, even now under Hodgson. And think about what Dougie did. You mentioned the lineup just now, Mike, and having a very solid, experienced centre-halves in Gardner and Paddy McCarthy. You know, Parr and Klein were very good at right-back. And you had KG and Mille back then. They were just getting together, but you'll see as seasons go on how great they were together. You had a young Zaha, side defense, and a young Johnny Williams. But it was such a structured team. And I went back and watched a couple of interviews that Dougie did, and Dougie was very confident in how he set up his team. He always said that, you know, he just believed in the team. He fed them confidence. Wilf especially talks very glowingly of Dougie, how Dougie nurtured him and gave him that chance. And I think that season, again, he played about 48 matches that year. And it was just interesting to see what Dougie had built. And it's a real shame that, you know, what he tried to build didn't continue. But I just think that season in general, he did a tremendous job of building. And the squad really wasn't that deep, but what he got out of that squad that year was very, very impressive.
Totally agree. And I find it a little bit strange that he hasn't pursued management up to now, really. It's an odd one. But I think we're still dealing with the scars of not having that deep a team. Certainly when we get to the promotion season, I think with the next episode, it is a great surprise that a team perhaps that did lack depth did manage to get through the playoffs. But if we carry on, we're into August now, late August. And this brings us to the point of the South London riots. and that had a big knock-on effect for the football, and it included a League Cup game against Crawley being delayed. So I assume that you two weren't living in South London at the time. So yeah, obviously you weren't. But I was living in Sutton, which didn't have that much of the riots. I was working in Croydon, working at Alders, who I'm sure some of you will know well. And we had big links to Palace. But it had a profound effect on everything. And every day you got up and checked Twitter just to see where people were planning to riot the next day. And it was quite exhilarating, to be honest. I was living in the High Street in Sutton, so you know, there was some riots. I remember the Tesco below me getting its glass smashed and that kind of stuff. But it put football in the background for a little bit. And it wasn't until the end of August that we ended up actually playing that game against Crawley and knocking them out, which I was very happy about, because my uncle is an enormous Crawley fan, like ridiculous. Like, he'd go to their AGMs and stuff and stick his hand up and make pointless comments. I've been there, stood in their stadium, freeze my tits off in their weird, terrible, like, wind tunnel of a stadium that they've got. I'm not a particularly big fan. But yeah, that's my abiding memories of that early season. And I think football kind of took the back burner for me. And I certainly don't remember, I've got here August the 27th, I watched it back. Murray scored his first goal for Palace against Blackpool. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember that game well. He looked, from minute one, he was one of those signings, Murray, a bit like Tompkins from West Ham, where you think, as soon as you see them, you think, how have we managed to get this player and why have the team let him go? Because, and I know we're on this pod, whole radio before, when we interviewed Dougie, he said that he had a bit of an attitude problem that he had to work with and sort of change him by not playing him, etc. But he looked so good. His movement was great, and he fitted in with the wingers really, really well. And I remember the Crawley game. It was when, you know, we had Zaha looked like he was something special at that game. Obviously, we'd seen him before, and you know, the season before, and he looked great. But that game, he dominated. I know it was lower opposition, but he was particularly good that game. And Murray just slotted in straight away. So I always thought new good things would come from him after that first game, that first goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, towards the end of his time, that spell at Brighton, Murray was sort of known for not being able to put stuff away. And we'll get to the FFS Murray stuff later. But in fact, he scored 54 goals in 118 appearances up to 2011 for Brighton, which is a hell of a scoring record. So he must have tailed off quite a lot at the end. But I certainly was happy to get him. And, you know, he definitely proved any doubters wrong. So, yeah, absolutely. Excellent point. And then, obviously, got to the second round of the League Cup, knocked Wigan out. And as we go forward, we'll see that the League Cup, it was definitely our year. What sticks in my mind is playing Middlesbrough twice in a week at Selhurst in September. I remember us losing in the league and being quite frustrated. I didn't feel like we should have lost that game. But then a couple of days later, winning in the cup and thinking, sod the league, we're going to be fine. I don't think we're in a state to go up, but we could deal with a cup run. And cup runs are, you know, they can be your cup of tea when you're in the Championship and you don't feel like your side's quite ready to go up. Those kind of things can really boost the fan base. And I think Patrick's totally right when he talked about the HF that season, because it's the first season I really remember them doing things and watching videos back. They were on form with their flags. They seemed like they'd taken up a lot more of the Homesdale than I remember from previous seasons. So did it feel like a watershed season to either of you boys?
For me, I would say yes. And I'll name a couple of reasons why. One, you know, you started to see the some of the younger players that we began to nurture, you know, come to fruition, Klein, Zaha and Williams. The crowd atmosphere changed around, like you just said, Mike. I thought the HF plays a bigger part. And we talk about today Fortress Sellers Park, but if you go back and look at our home record that season, especially in the cup games, obviously, because we would have got knocked out had we not won them, we did much better in the cup at home. And I think that really helped us. So I think that Watershed is good. And again, if you look at the crux of our promotion squad going forward, it was based on the fact some of the buys that Dougie did the season before, you know, Jednak, KG, Murray, who we particularly said he went after. I don't know if you guys watched the video, but he actually mentions that he'd go to Brighton matches and get booed by the Brighton fans as he was scouting Murray, knowing that Murray's contract was up and he'd be getting him on a free, but he had to kind of convince him to come to Palace. So, you know, the rivalry being as it was. So it was, I think it very much was a watershed season for us, especially again with that huge cup run.
Yeah, you're right, Patrick. And when you're in those lower leagues, you know, the Championship and lower, you look forward to the cup runs and they are highlights of the season. And that weekend game was a really special one because I had a lot of, and I know it was irrational, but I had a lot of hatred towards Wigan after the administration years and them stealing Moses away from us for what was a bit of a snippet price, really.
Yeah, and great point. I remember that now as well. I remember getting angry.
That's it. And I remember he was, so on that game, I remember it, he was on the bench and so was Ben Watson, and who we loved a little bit more than that. But so that getting over them, and then obviously they both started, they were both off the bench, and as I said, they weren't starting, but you just really wanted to beat Wigan. It had an irrational amount of importance, that game. And I remember it was such a good feeling when we won. But yeah, it was weird to see him back. I think it was the first time he was back, Moses, I think, that game. And I said it was strange to see him.
I mean, and let's not forget that they were sort of middle table Premier League team at the time as well. So we're talking a fairly decent upset. But Patrick's absolutely right. The home form that season was exceptional up until the end of the season, and the away form not so much. It was that kind of season where we coined the phrase Fortress Selhurst, and to an extent we still try and cling to it, even though it's flagrantly not true whatsoever these days. But yeah, nice memories. And speaking of nice memories, we then get to the Brighton 1 Palace 3 game where we were 1-0 down. Did either of you guys watch it live? Do you remember, or did you even go, Si?
No, yeah, so I didn't go to that game. But obviously, and back then it was more difficult to get the games, wasn't it, on the streams? So it was a great result, and that was the one where Dougie always says he's most proud of, isn't it, in terms of having the youth team on the pitch that day. And obviously, I think it was Zaha assist, and then I think it was Zaha, Williams and Scannell that day. And I think Freeman often says that was one of his proudest moments, Palace manager, having those three in a 3-1 win at the Amex.
So it was Zaha, Ambrose, and then it was the epic FFS Murray goal. That was the, so we were 1-0 down, and then Ambrose was not on the pitch, was subbed on with 10 minutes to go. And we went from 1-0 down to 3-1 up. That was the game that coined the FFS Murray goal when he scored the third.
My memory of that game is that obviously I wasn't there because I was in America, but I subscribed back then to Palace Radio. That might have been there for a season, actually. So I got to listen to that second half because I was working because they have a time difference. So I got home probably half time. We were already losing. And then surprisingly, I'm listening to the commentary and I realized that Ambrose hadn't started, which I found quite strange. And then he comes on the 80th minute, scores the goal. Zaha, I guess, then scores, and then Murray scores. And it was really interesting to listen to the play-by-play. When you listen to Palace Radio, they're very, very biased. So the excitement in their voices was great. And again, obviously, with that being the rivalry, I kind of see that in my mind as being a really epic match for that season. And then I went back later on, about a week later, I guess, that video comes out on YouTube, the FFS Murray, and I just played it over and over and over again. I thought it was brilliant.
It probably was, but that and the Man United games were the two that stick in my memory from that season. Yeah. And I remember going on to Homesdale.net the next day, and you know, they various screen prints of angry Brighton fans talking about Murray. And I think it was at that point. Until then, I was happy that he'd been signed, but I hadn't really thought too much of it. But at that point, he seemed to sort of skyrocket from, you know, perhaps useful to absolutely crucial. And realizing this is probably only his second goal, but because of the fact that he'd shook off this kind of aura of not being able to score that he seemed to have developed from his at the end of his time at Brighton, it felt like a bit of a sea change, and it was a huge victory. There's no question about it. You score three in the last 10 minutes against anyone, that's amazing, let alone against rivals as big as that. And you know, I'd always grown up with Millwall being the team that I particularly wanted us to play, and that would be the first team that I'd notice when the games came out. But Brighton, you know, it's always something that you look for as well. So that was a huge victory. And it's, you know, it was all anyone chatted about in Alders the next day. You know, as I said, I've said in the last episode, everyone there was a Palace fan. That's all you talked about at breaks when you're having a fag or whatever. So absolutely huge. And I think that the next day sticks in my mind as much as that. Then a little bit later, speaking of Millwall, 0-0 draw at home, which from what I remember, we were absolutely robbed and we should have won about 4-0. Murray missed the penalty. But I can't believe that they managed to rob us of a point or 2 points there, because that annoyed me immensely. And all I can say is that it wasn't too many more times we actually got to play Millwall. So, you know, fair enough. But let's get to November now. And probably the biggest game of the season, the one that everyone will remember, Manchester United 1, Palace 2. So, talk through your memories of that game.
That was one of the highlights of the last probably the last 10 years at least, even with the Premier League promotion years and survival. That game, we had it felt like that's towards the end of that month and the second half of the season, our squad was megally depleted and Ambrose was on the bench. If I remember, he didn't start the game, and I remember we put out what, you know, for a lot of it was a felt like even a second string team for us. And to go there and win that game, it was just immense. And not only that, to actually deserve to win the game on the day, to want it more, and to actually to be the better side overall, it was just it was excellent.
Yeah, that moment stands out for a few reasons. First, November 30th, 2011, my son's 19th birthday. He was away at university, and we were just trying to text back and forth. And I made him into a big Palace fan, so. During that match, we were texting back and forth, and I actually just couldn't. That result, just I couldn't believe it. And I was lucky enough, because like I've told you guys before, you don't get a lot of matches over here live, but that game was live on television, because that year a company, Fox, bought the rights for the League Cup, so they televised a big match, and they picked that game because they figured, you know, Palace would get slaughtered by United. So when I saw the lineup, I was a little concerned. You know, did we have a full strength side? I understood what Dougie was trying to do, obviously, because obviously we didn't have a big squad, but I was okay with it. But I looked at United squad, I was like, well, they're not taking it that seriously. I mean, Sir Alex, you know, they did have a young Paul Pogba in their lineup. They had Valencia played and pretty sure Park played. So they had a pretty decent side. And again, they were a Premier League side. So of course they're going to, you know, be favoured. But that goal by Ambrose, I mean, he did something similar, you know, later on against Villa. Sorry, not later on, but against Villa. Previous season, but that was an unbelievable goal. And even today, when I watch it back and watch it back again, I cannot believe the power and the swerve in that shot and then the audacity to take it. And then the funny thing is, as someone mentioned, I think it was Dougie mentioned, he did it in training all the time, which I find to be unbelievable that a player could hit a ball. But again, it's having seen it doing against Villa, you know, so well. So brilliant game. And then, you know, going through extra time and then Murray pops up and gets the, you know, little set play, free kick, goal to win the match. It was just incredible. And beat United and then get on to the semi-final of a major cup was just unbelievable. It was just a really, really tremendous memory for me. One I really will be hard for me to forget.
And I'm not having... So, obviously, everyone's got loads of Man United fans because they're everywhere, and our friends. But I'm not having... I remember the argument I had with loads of them. That was a weakened Man United team. When you look at those that started, you had Dimitar Berbatov starting, Ji-Sung Park, you had Valencia, you had Chris Morning, Johnny Evans. That was a decent Man United team against, you know, look at our starting lineup where we had David Wright, Stuart O'Keefe, and you know, players like that, and Jermaine Easter up front starting the game. So it was miraculous, and it just showed you how good a tactician I think Dougie was. Obviously, the magic from Ambrose was amazing, but tactically, I think he managed the game really well. And I don't know if you remember in the last minute of the extra time, I think this is one of the things that sort of pricked Man United's interest in terms of Wilfried Zaha. He picked the ball up in his own area or close to our own area at the end of the game, and he ran the length of the pitch in something like the final minute of extra time. I remember the commentators on the TV saying, you know, look at the kid, look how much energy he's got and power he's got and pace and trickery at that time of the game. It was just all around a special performance.
And then, great point, Si. The thing about Dougie was, if you watch again that YouTube on that season, he said we were down 1-0, and he said, I didn't feel we were going to lose a match. I felt confident. We stuck to our game plan, everything, and it worked. And then the point about Zaha is great, because that's the match that got United interested in Zaha, because you can tell he was such a young, again, same age as my sons. He's 19 back then. He's, you know, he's vibrant. He's attacking. He had showed no fear. He was going at United players, and it was just brilliant. And you're right. I remember that run that he made. It was a long busting run at the end of the match, and I think he took a wild shot, went over the bar. But the point that he had the guts and the energy to do that was important. And again, that's the reason why I think United wanted to buy him in the first place.
Spot on. Yeah, I was about to bring that up. Yeah, I remember watching it in Croydon, and I don't think anyone in the bar thought that we'd lose when they did equalise with a penalty. And I think justice was done, to be honest. Live long in the memory. And before we get on to the disappointment of the semis, a few other things before the end of the year. Barnsley scoring after 7 seconds against us in a 2-1 loss. I vaguely remember that. I tried to block it out of my memory. And then almost a year to the day after the Millwall defeat that ended up in management changes that you listened to in the last pod, we actually ended up with an away win at Millwall, which I vaguely remember as well. But New Year's Eve, no one's sober, are they? Let's be honest. So New Year's, we were eighth, and things were looking very rosy. I'm not sure how much I remember thinking about the playoffs. I was definitely thinking more about the League Cup at that point. So when we got knocked out of the FA Cup at Derby 1-0, I remember being a little bit frustrated, but not too bothered, knowing that we had a semi 3 days later, and obviously Dougie put out a second team against Derby, so there was no great surprise. So talk us through, gentlemen, your memories of the two legs against Cardiff, because I remember the first one thinking we were absolutely robbed to only get 1-0 win, and the second one they were absolutely robbed to only get a 1-0 win.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, first leg again, there's a brilliant YouTube video that has focused totally on HF. If the camera points at them, I think they might put up a promotional type thing, and you hear them singing. So one of my memories is the crowd atmosphere was brilliant at the home match. Anthony Gardner gets the goal. We're up 1-0. And I thought, you know, to be fair, we deserve to have that lead going into the second. Like, I think maybe we could have gotten a goal or more to it, felt a little more comfortable. But I wasn't overly concerned with Cardiff. The second leg, my memories are, they were all over us for most of the match. And then Paddy gets that unfortunate second yellow for the red card. And at that point, I'm just hoping we get to extra time and then penalties. And I think it might have hit the crossbar in the post maybe four times during that match. I know Whittingham probably hit a couple of times, and Miller probably hit the bar or the post. So getting the penalties, I was just glad to get there. But when we got the penalties, we just really tired. And I had no confidence in anybody taking a kick. And the only one I remember of the penalty kicks, I remember two in particular. Mele's penalty, because who knew going forward he'd be such a great penalty kick taker. And he scored his very, very well. And then Parr's miss at the end. Gut-wrenching. It really was. But again, it was tough, the two legs. As Mike, you just said, we were this close to getting to Wembley. And, you know, you can tell by what Dougie had done. Dougie had planned this whole thing to get to the cup final. The way he put out the team for against Derby in the FA Cup, and just our league form be running up to it, was very spotty. So it's a real shame. And I think the players, they would have deserved that, because Cardiff wasn't that good of a team. I mean, they ended up losing Liverpool in the final. But that was just it would have been such a nice thing to get to a final year. But again, my memories are basically those.
Yeah, I was actually at the Derby game, the 1-0 defeat. And I just remember from start to finish, we were awesome. We outsung the Derby fans. It was a crazy game. The atmosphere was absolutely brilliant in that game. For a 1-0 loss to Derby with a second string team, it was still special. And then obviously the Cardiff first leg, if you look at a lot of the YouTube clips of the HF, a lot of them come up from that Cardiff home game in the cup. And I think that was one of their earliest and biggest sort of banner events, and they really sort of outshone everyone on that game. They were awesome. And then, as a Palace fan, you get used to disappointing semis. I mean, I've had that many disappointing semis as a Palace fan and an England fan.
I've got to stop you on the disappointing semis.
yeah, I've got to be honest about that. Yeah, yeah. But get used to, I mean, I remember the most disappointing one, though, it wasn't this one. It was the one where we beat Michael Owen's Liverpool 2-1 at Selhurst Park, and Clinton Morrison scored a few years before that. And then I think we got battered 5-0 over at Anfield.
We lost 5-0, and I was in the cop, and Kalinko got sent off.
It wasn't that close, was it?
Kalinko, Kalinko got sent off.
Classic days. So, but no, it was disappointing. And that was probably the worst penalty shootout from us I've ever seen. I remember, as Patrick said, every single penalty, you had no confidence we were going to score. I think we were awful. But what a run, considering the size of our squad. And to get to there and the journey we had, beating Wigan and beating United, it was still a special run.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. So it was actually Sean Scannell, Jermaine Easter, and Johnny Parr that missed the penalties. I remember that game well because I was in. I don't know why I was in the main stand, and I'm never in the main stand, so that sticks in my memory. But I remember feeling that we were absolutely robbed. So when I watched the second game on the TV, I had an inevitable thought that we would be going out. As often happens with the two teams that I follow, Palace and England, the times you think you are going to get through something, you inexplicably don't. So obviously that was soul-destroying. And the season took a nosedive from there, starting with Ashley Barnes. Scoring to see Brighton get a point at Selhurst when they didn't deserve it straight after that. That was very depressing, and that's just one of a long list of Ashley Barnes' depressing incidents that we can all reel off. We did actually go 10 games unbeaten after the semi-final, but with nothing, with a sort of feeling that things were going nowhere, after that stress, yes. It wasn't looking like we were going up, and a few draws and that kind of thing. So cool. It wasn't, other than what I've put here to remember, was a 4-0 win at against Watford, where Chris Martin scored. I'm not sure whether he scored a hat trick or whether he scored two. I can't remember. That game sticks in my memory, but otherwise, it was a period sort of a bit after the Lord Mayor's show, really. And after that, a poor end to the season. 9 games without a win. And it was just totally the fact that the side were drained. You know, as both of my esteemed colleagues here have alluded to, the squad wasn't very deep. And Dougie has an interesting comment to say about how he thought that the depth of his squad and the League Cup run had a detrimental effect on the end of the season.
Our problem's been getting into March, where we had 8 games in 1 month with a squad that's not big enough, strong enough, and too many young kids, because of the influences of that cup, emotionally and physically drained.
So yeah, the season petered out. Essentially, we ended up 17th. Although, spoiler alert, if you listen to the next episode, things went better pretty quickly. But poetically, the season ended with a home defeat to Cardiff, who inflicted misery on us in the most part for the entire season due to their beating us in the League Cup.
I would like to say that at this point in the season was, I got to give Dougie credit for a few things. One, like I said, the way he set the team and the confidence he gave a lot of players, I think, for a pretty small squad was great. The cup run was great. And also, I want to say that the rivalries, which I've always focused in on, he did a great job. Because that season, we beat Brighton 3-1 away and drew 1-1 at home. Drew twice to West Ham, 2-2 and 0-0, and drew at home to Millwall, beating 1-0 away. So we didn't lose a derby match. So from that standpoint, I want to add that as another memorable part of that season.
Great point. I remember we've had a debate in the past about whether you'd prefer to finish above a side or beat them in derbies. And ideally, you want to do both, but... I think Terence decided that he'd rather beat Brighton and Millwall. And I said I'd rather finish above them and brag afterwards. But, you know, ideally you'd do both, wouldn't you? Yeah, and the last thing I'd say on discussion on the season is that Zaha scored in that last Cardiff game. And that was definitely signs of things to come. As we talked about, he was in the shop window against Man United and it wasn't too long before he went over there. And had that 15 million transfer over to Man United.
Yeah, and add to that, Mike, I didn't realise that after watching the video. He scored 9 goals that season. He's 19 years old, so we always talk about his end product, but 9 goals has to be close to his best ever output as a goal scorer. So he actually could score goals when he started. I guess we just wanted to be more consistent because there are years when he scores, you know, 4 and 5. But 9 goals at 19 years old is an excellent output for a player even in the Championship.
Oh no, absolutely, Patrick. It was an awesome season from him. And you know, the thing is, United. I remember some of the press conferences, etc. Before when they signed him, and they said his progress over the previous 18 months had been rapid. And if you think of that season and the season after, he bossed that league. He absolutely won the Championship. It was kind of, you know, we sung the song, "He's Just Too Good For You." It was embarrassing to watch. There was, you know, men who were like 10, 12 years older than him just had no chance against him. And they just clattered him because that's all they could do. But, you know, that season was a real foundation for him. And next year he just shone even more. And it was a pleasure to watch him in that Championship era because he was just so good.
As it still is now, unless by the time you listen to this, he's at Arsenal, which I hope... He is not. So,
please no. Please.
So, a bit of listener comment about the season. We asked people their memories of that season, mainly because we found our initial plan with this was to look up old tweets and talk about them. But it's very hard to look back for Facebook stuff that old, and Twitter was very much in its infancy until about 2 years after this. So. We've asked people their memories. We'll start with Rob S, who said, "Whatever happened to Johnny Parr? What a left foot and a great haircut too." Agreed. So had a look. He went from Palace in 2014 to Ipswich, played 41 times for them. And he's now at Strom's Godset. I'm sure I haven't said that right. He's played 83 times. So, you know, he's still only 30 now. I'm sure he's got a fair few years in him. And I don't doubt that his haircut is still exceptional. Dean Hyatt, a bit cheeky. Dougie could spot a player back then. Well, that is cheeky.
No, I tell you, Dougie was what a manager. And I think the season after was obviously with the longest unbeaten run that year. I won't spoil the next pod, but that season, I know I've eulogised him a bit here, but he was brilliant. And he, you know, some of those signings he made in the summer before then, you know, and we talked about them earlier, to bring in Jedinak, Murray, and then obviously later on Boyassi, you know, part. He was just I mean, I know I am in love with Dougie, I'm not going to lie to you, but what a manager. And that season, he did a great job with the tools he had.
Certainly did. When we get to Boyassi, I will definitely be a happy man reminiscing about that. So Rob Purcell asked Johnny Williams' debut. So that was already alluded to. Did you say that was the Peterborough game?
I think he came on that game where he started. Yeah, I think that season was his full. Well, that game was his debut. I'm pretty sure it was. Again, what a season he had. He looked a class above. Him and Wilf were genuinely a class above.
Well, Rob, feel free to challenge us on that if his memories are wrong, but that sounds reasonable to me. Ryan Delahunty, consecutive Tuesday night matches against Barnsley and Doncaster were probably the two worst games of football I've seen at Palace, and amazingly we took 4 points. How we won against Doncaster, I'll never know. Now, I can't remember this whatsoever, so sorry, fill us in.
All I remember from that time was we always struggled against Doncaster. It didn't matter how good we were or where we were in the league. Whenever we played Doncaster, we always struggled. And I don't know if it was the season before. I may be getting it completely after. I may be completely wrong. But I don't know if it was in them that Damien Delaney got sent off for a sliding tackle the season afterwards. I can't remember if I was accurate on that one. But we always struggled against Doncaster. And it was a dire game. Ryan's right. I don't know how we got points out of that game, but we were absolutely awful, and Doncaster always had a knack of being able to beat us or play very well against us.
Yeah, it seems that we actually beat Barnsley and drew with Doncaster 1-1, so we took, well, I guess it was 4 points, but he's right about consecutive Tuesdays. It was a 1-0 at home March 20th against Barnsley, and we drew 1-1 the following Tuesday, March 27th against Doncaster. So for us, being dire, getting 4 points in that run is pretty decent.
Well, your memory, Ryan, is exceptional. Fair enough. So, WH said, Alex Marrow, where is he now? So, looked him up. Alexander James Marrow, actually only born in 1990, which really surprised me. So, he's still only 29, which is depressing indeed. The last time anyone made note of where he was at AFC Fylde. So, it looks as though his professional career sort of petered out quite a lot, which is depressing. He only played a handful of games after Palace at various sides, on loan at Preston, on loan at Fleetwood, Blackburn, Carlisle. So he stayed up in the Northwest without pulling up any trees, which is a great shame. So if anyone has any more news on Alex Marrow, we will bring it up in future episodes.
Mike, real quick, on Marrow, I don't remember seeing him play that much, but my memories of him are the following. There was a lot of talk of him on the message boards, and the reason was he was a very versatile player. He could play midfield and play centre-half, so people thought, oh, he'd be a great player for us. But unfortunately, I think you documented that he got a lot of injuries. He was injured with us. He never played. I think he had a really bad injury for us. It might have actually been a pre-season match, then he tried to play through it, and then he couldn't get over the injury,
he was really badly injured.
And I think that's what killed him. But it's a shame, because I didn't see him that often, obviously, but I did hear a lot of good things about him, and it's a real shame he didn't, you know, get a chance to kind of, because you just said he's only 29 years old. Back then he was 21, 22 years old, so he would have obviously been, you know, coming through the system. So it's a shame he was hurt so often.
One of my memories from the season was and a bit of the season afterwards was Owen Garvin at times looked like a world beater. So he looked like, he had games where he looked absolutely brilliant and then games where he was atrocious. But more memories than not of Owen Garvin were how he dominated games in the midfield and looked really positive. And I think the season after was when he scored a couple of goals in one of the games right at the beginning. But he was really strange as a player because not a lot of people rated him, but I've got really fond memories of him.
You know what? Thank you for that. Owen Garvin was an enigma. I'm going to date myself now, and people who are old as I am are going to remember. We had a player back in the 70s. Irish player. Oh, no. Joey Murphy. Left-footed just like Garvin, and very much similar players. And I never took Joey Murphy either. Something about those type of players, as skillful as they are, they seem to go so slow. And I thought Garvin was one of the slowest players I've ever seen. And I actually saw him play live because I came over for the playoff final. And he actually had a pretty good game in the playoff final against Watford. But I just always felt he could give it so much more. And I was always told, oh no, when we get to the Premier League, he could be a better player because the game is slower, blah, blah, blah. And in the Premier League, he did absolutely nothing. So he's one of those players who I really wanted to do well and I really wanted to root for. But I just found him to be very frustrating as a player, Owen Garvin.
That's funny. I don't remember him being that slow. But yeah, fair enough. Actually, the player of the season that season was Johnny Parr. But we'll end on a comment from Sam Hesketh from this very parish, who said that Anthony Gardner was robbed for player of the season that season. And I can't help but agree with him. Any last memories, chaps?
Just to say that was, I think that Cardiff game or a couple of games before was the last time we saw Scanner win a Paddy shirt. And yeah, he was a great seventh for us. And it was great to see him. And he really, really kicked on over those years. So he was another good talent from the academy.
Amen. Okay, well, we will be back with the 12-13 season, which obviously, and again, no spoilers, was quite the eventful season. And you'll see some very familiar faces there. So until then, hope you've enjoyed this and thank you very much for listening.
Back of the Nest, the Palace years.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.